Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the economic bubble when we come back. You know, the genocidal policy of Global 2000 and the New World Order are the greatest threats to our lives, our liberties, and our property since Noah's flood, and that's not just my opinion. Jesus of Nazareth held that same view, and here's what he said in Matthew 24, verse 22. He said that except those days should be shortened, there should no flesh be saved alive. Now, there are 64 life-threatening problems described in the scripture detailing this New World Order and their Global 2000 genocide plan, and the scripture teaches preparation for an event called the Great Tribulation, not apathy, not indifference. That's why I contend that it's time that you and I wise up and start listening more to the God of Israel and stop following after all of these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians. You know, politicians like Ted Kennedy, Arlen Specter, Hillary. Now, let's prepare to live through and survive this Global 2000 New World Order nightmare. And to do just that, why don't you call or write or send an email to the law school and ask for those 64 life-threatening problems from the scriptures. And let's talk about formulating a real, meaningful, intelligent plan to survive Global 2000 and these other 64 life-threatening problems that are called the Great Tribulation in scripture. Now, to do that, just call and order my free General Law CD package. That's the place to start. The CD package, that's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. Now, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call and order right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, my subsistence and survival school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, why don't you go to the website, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send an email request for that General Law CD package. Remember, georgegordon.org. Or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were talking about the core rate. The core rate of the CPI. That's a mouthful, isn't it? Well, the CPI is called the Consumer Price Index. Remember that? CPI, Consumer Price Index. You hear that term used quite often. It's actually a lie. It's a government fiction. And the core rate of the CPI is a fictional concept designed to soothe the financial markets and distract them from the reality of rising inflation. The core rate does not exist anywhere in our country. It is a fictional concept designed by government to obfuscate the problems of inflation. So the next time you go to the grocery store and you experience shock and awe as the checker rings up your shopping cart, why don't you ask that checker for the core rate? Yeah, just ask the checkout clerk. For the core rate on the items that are being checked out and see what kind of a look you get. For that matter, when it comes time to make your monthly mortgage payment, instead of making your mortgage payment, send a bill to your lender for owner's equivalent rent. Owner's equivalent rent. And the next time you pay your taxes in any form, you know, your property taxes, income taxes, social security taxes, you know, whether income or property, hedonically adjust the bill for the lower quality of government service. Or if your tax bill went up, just use hedonics to adjust the bill downward. Ah, you might say, this is impractical. Nobody can ever get away with that. And you'd be right. But perhaps it's a question that we must now ask of our government. Somebody should start questioning the report and the reported inflation numbers, as our caller did at the beginning of this article. Problems can only be solved when they're first acknowledged. Washington, we have a problem. It is inflation, not deflation. Now, what needs to be monitored next as the U.S. economy falls into recession and perhaps depression is what happens to money and credit and the price of the dollar. If credit expands and if the Federal Reserve or foreign central banks print money to buy our bonds, where will the next asset bubble occur? You see, as long as we live in a world of fiat currencies with no backing to any of the world's currencies, central banks are free to print as much money as they want to. And there's nothing to stop them from doing that. And what we have seen in this new fiat world is that when money and credit expands rapidly, there are always sectors that will inflate and others that will deflate. As the technology bubble deflated, three bubbles in bonds, mortgages, and real estate took its place. During this time, while new asset bubbles were in the process of inflating, as one asset bubble deflated, the CPI fell and was cut in half, giving way to the argument of deflation. In reality, the only deflation that was taking place was at the Bureau of Labor Statistics in its substitutions and its hedonic statistical models. We call that the core rate. Now, the deflationists' arguments that inflation only takes place during times of war and expanding government budgets isn't necessarily true. War or expanding budgets aren't necessarily for inflation to occur. Prime examples are Latin America and more recently Argentina and Brazil. You can take a look at Turkey and Russia, as is the Weimar Republic back in 1923. Now, if deflation takes hold in the United States, it won't be as the deflationists now see it. It will be as a result of the currency falling faster than the rise in nominal prices as it occurred in the Weimar Republic of Germany back in the early 1920s. Now, given the size of mortgage debt and the amount of leverage in our economy and financial system today, the Fed will not tighten rates in any significant way. And the table listed below, taken from the current bond market and John Williams' real CPI, shows just how far behind current interest rates are from real inflation rates. Now, maybe you have been buying bonds. Maybe the pension fund that you're relying upon for your retirement has invested your pension money into bonds or stocks. And if so, here's what the results are. In federal funds, the rate is 3.25%. With inflation, the net loss is 2.25%. So you put in $100, you expect to make $3.25, and you actually lose $2.25. The one-year treasury bill pays 3.48%, the actual loss 2.02%. And the two-year note, 3.62%, the actual loss, 1.89%. The five-year note, 3.73%, the actual loss, 1.77%. The 10-year note pays 3.95%, the actual loss is 1.55%. The 30-year bond pays 4.25%, its actual loss is 1.25%. Now, when you're investing your money, you expect to make a profit, and you actually do. You put $100 in the bank. Whether it's for federal funds, a one-year T-bill, a two-year note, a five-year note, a 10-year note, or a 30-year bond, and at the end of that period, they actually pay you more money than you paid in. You invested $100, and you got paid back $104.25. But the purchasing power, in the purchasing power, you lost $1.25. Now, that's what this core rate is doing to you people out there. And the average Joe Sixpack American has never had anybody explain it to him, and that's why I thought I would give you this report. It's called The Financial Sense Online, Stormwatch, The Core Rate by Jim Puplava, P-U-P-L-A-V-A. I hope I'm not butchering your name too badly there, Jim. Jim Puplava, maybe it's Puplava, I'm not quite sure how to pronounce it, but P-U-P-L-A-V-A, Stormwatch Update, brand new report, June 24th, 2005, called The Core Rate, Stormwatch Update by Jim Puplava. You can probably get a copy of it, www.financialsense.com. FinancialSense.com, www.financialsense, all one word, .com, /stormwatch/2005, and so on. And what we're looking at here is the government lying to us again concerning this thing called the core rate in the CPI. And what they've done here, they have made substitutions. And while inflation's real ravages are at 1% a month, 12% a year, we're told, and if you've got a union contract, probably your pay increases are tied to the CPI. If you're on Social Security, your increases in benefits are tied to the CPI, the Consumer Price Index. And while the Consumer Price Index shows that inflation is 3% a year, the actual inflation rate is 12% a year because of these manipulations that Puplava is describing here in what's known as the core rate of the CPI. Now, as the U.S. debt burden increases with each passing month, the Federal Reserve has only one option, which will be to print more money. Now, up until now, foreign central banks have relieved the Federal Reserve of most of that burden. Foreign central banks have been doing most of the money printing in an effort to sterilize capital inflows into their countries and to keep their currencies from appreciating. Now, this issue has become more serious than is commonly recognized. According to the latest Q1, the Flow of Funds report, first quarter non-financial debt expanded a record $2.4 trillion. Boys and girls, let me repeat that. The Flow of Funds report, first quarter, non-financial debt expanded $2.4 trillion. That's not $2.4 billion or $2.4 million. That's $2,400 billion in one quarter. Now, as Doug Noland reports in his June 10th credit bubble bulletin, during the decade of the 90s, non-financial debt expanded on average $700 billion annually. Now, let me put that in perspective for you. $1 trillion is $1,000 billion. $1 billion is $1,000 million. Okay, so if you got this in your mind now, during the 1990s, this credit, the non-financial debt expanded on an average $700 billion a year. Now it's up to $2.4 trillion per quarter. We've got debt. I mean, we're talking about hyperinflation on the order of a banana republic in Central America back in the 1940s and 50s. So get ready, boys and girls. What we have been telling you for the last 30 years is about to descend on us like a, or with a vengeance. It's about to happen right here in the United States. Now, when this happens, there are going to be some massive transfers of property and wealth. Your objective, I would presume, is to hang on to as much of that wealth, as much of the wealth that you've accumulated over your lifetime as is possible, which is the purpose for this series of programs. I'm going to start here with the CPI. I'm going to start here with the lies that they've been telling us over the last, well, 10 years now, about 1996. You see, the CPI used to give us a pretty accurate picture of what's going on out here in the real world concerning inflation. Well, now that they've turned on the inflation machine, they have to come up with a solution. So they have changed the way they count inflation. As old Mark Twain used to say, you know, he said, there's liars, and there's damn liars, and then there's statistics. And these statistics now come out of our government. That's the Bureau of Labor Statistics. That's the CPI, the Consumer Price Index. There's also a PPI, it's called the Producer Price Index. And all of these numbers now are skewed with lies and inaccuracies. So if you've got $100 in the bank today, next year at this time, just go to the 4th of July, 2006, at 12% inflation, a pair of shoes that cost $100 today are going to cost you $112 next year. So you're going to lose $12 in purchasing power. So if you invest that $100 in stocks, bonds, real estate, or something else, are you going to get that 12% return? In order to make any money, you've got to have 12% to cover inflation, 5% to make a profit. So you've got to have a 17% return right now. Now, have you got any investments out there that are paying 17%? Now, blow-off credit creation is now more than three times the pace, three times the pace. Consider these facts from Doug Gillespie research. He said, during 2004, foreign investors absorbed an extraordinary 98.5% of all treasury issuance. That's a net of $357.2 billion acquired versus a net of $363 billion issued. So our government would issue $363 billion worth of bonds, and foreigners would come in here and take 357 of it, nearly all of it for practical purposes. They were just taking it all. Foreigners absorbed almost as large a proportion of the issuance of U.S. agency securities, 93%, a net of $129 billion acquired versus the net issuance of $138 billion that was issued. So the combined foreign purchases of treasuries and agencies equaled a stunning 97% of the total issuance. Now, as to the purchase of corporate bonds, foreign investors took down a net $265 billion, that was 44.7% of the total issuance. In addition to the huge proportion of total treasury acquisitions last year, the Federal Reserve added $51 billion to its own treasury portfolio. So this means that during 2004, the Federal Reserve and foreign investors absorbed $408 billion, that's 112% of the total issuance of $362 billion. Obviously, this had a highly favorable influence on balance, on treasury yields during 2004, and although an influence hugely lacking in traditional open market characteristics, this explains the Greenspan conundrum as to why long-term rates or yields have fallen while the Fed raised short-term rates. So as of April 1st of this year, 2005, foreign investors held a total of $9.7 trillion of U.S. financial assets. That's almost $400 billion higher from revised holdings of $9.3 trillion. Now, the increase was approximately $1.1 trillion. That's over 1 year, $1.1 trillion. I mean, we're not talking in billions anymore, boys and girls. We're talking about trillions. Now, remember, a trillion is 1,000 billion. So for all of 2004, foreign investors acquired a record $1.2 trillion of U.S. financial assets, and during 2005's first quarter, this figure fell to an annual $1.17 trillion, not materially below last year's record level. Now, during this year's first quarter, a very high 73% of U.S. financial asset acquisition by foreign investors was in highly marketable, therefore highly liquid or exposed asset classes. Now, this was up from about 66% for all of 2004 and equal to the same 73% level achieved in 2003. Hang on a minute. See if we can get rid of the static. All right, let's try that. Now, in effect, the United States is exporting its inflation around the world, and it will ultimately result in deflation in the rest of the world, which is heavily laden with overcapacity. And the hyperinflation in the United States, when foreigners no longer finance our deficits, that is when the end game of hyperinflating our way out of our debt bubble really begins. Now, unlike the gold standard of years past, today there are no self-correcting mechanisms in the global monetary system. The dollar, or any other currency for that matter, has absolutely no intrinsic value, and all currencies are fiat currencies and have no limit to the amount of its supply. There can be no dollar short position, as some imply, because by its very nature, the supply of dollars is unlimited, as the above statistics illustrate. So what's going on, boys and girls, is that we're over-consuming in the United States, and we're on a buying binge. We're just buying Chinese tennis shoes and Chinese big-screen TVs and whatever the Chinese can produce, along with the Japanese and Malaysians and everybody else, just as fast as we can buy them. And we're sending out pieces of paper and promising these people that we're going to pay them someday with something in tangible form, Caterpillar tractors maybe, or computer chips or gold or silver or something. And you'll notice that the Chinese today are coming into the marketplace and say, well, good, we've got all these dollars that we've piled up, so let's buy the Union Oil Company. Let's buy the Maytag Corporation. They've got $600 billion and they want to spend them before they lose value at the rate of 12% a year. So you're going to see America sold off to the highest bidder, and the highest bidder is going to be the Chinese, the Japanese, and South Koreans, and other people. How is that going to impact America and Americans? What is that going to do to you and I? And if anything, what can we do about it? What should you and I, Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife, be doing today to protect ourselves from the ravages of a Weimar Republic hyperinflation, or a Bolivia, or a Peru, or an Ecuador, a Banana Republic hyperinflationary period? What can we do? Is there anything that we can do? Well, the answer to that is, you bet there is. There's a lot we can do. And history is replete with examples of what people have done in the past and how they came out when it was all said and done. Some people come out better than others. Now, if we could take a look at what other people have done in the past and then take a look at the results that they achieved, then we could make a better, more informed decision as to what you and I want to do today in 2005 with the upcoming inflation. Now, the good part about this is that this doesn't happen overnight. You know, it's not like turning on the TV and pushing the switch and turning off the TV. It occurs over a long period of time. Hyperinflation in Germany took about 3 years to develop and about 1.5 years to collapse. So it was over a period of about 5 years. Now this hyperinflation has just begun. We probably have 2 or 3 or 4 years as it gets worse and worse and prices go up and jobs are exported overseas and so on. You know, there are certain moves that you can be making, and I'll describe those as we progress along, because people are making those moves, and they're making good moves in my view to protect themselves from the ravages of this hyperinflation that's coming upon us. Now, the real risk is what happens when confidence in the dollar wanes, as it must, like the Weimar Republic, which had its currency accepted as a means of payment during the initial stages of the inflation. The jig was up once foreigners realized the full extent of the mark's depreciation. That's when they began disposing of the mark, and the hyperinflationary stage was set to unfold. Now, as of right now, boys and girls, nobody in the world is wise to the fact that this hyperinflation is going on. I say nobody in the world. You can bet that Warren Buffett, by the way, this guy Buffett here about, I don't know, 2, 3, 4 years ago, he bought over $100 million worth of silver and stashed it in England, took it right out of the United States and put it over in England, stashed it. Now, when I see moves like that made by the Donald Trumps and Warren Buffetts and the Bill Gates of the world, I say to myself, aha, you know, these insiders, these big money people, they must know something is coming down or they wouldn't be making those kind of purchases. I was reading a piece by Buffett not too long ago. He's got out of the dollar altogether, as money as in other assets and other currencies. So that sent me a signal. It said, well, if Warren Buffett doesn't want any American dollars, why would George Gordon want any American dollars? See if we can get rid of that static. So your common sense ought to tell you the same thing, you know, unless your brain did. And when Bill Gates is over here investing his money in something other than U.S. dollars or stocks and bonds, you know, what's that tell you? Tells you that that's a fool's errand and that something big is about to come down. Now, you may not own $1 billion, or you may not even own $1 million or $100,000, but you probably have a house. You probably have some equity in your cars. You probably have some debts. How are you going to deal with those debts? What are you going to do when GMAC comes by and says, hey, we're repossessing the family pickup here. We're going to take your house away from you now because you're not making the payments. And you say, well, gee, I'm unemployed. They exported my job to India. Huh, well, you think you can pay your car payments and your house payments with the excuse that they exported my job to India? I'm going to tell you a little story here, so listen up. I met a guy in New Jersey the other day. I've had more than one do this, but I'll tell you about this guy, because he really scored pretty big. He was working for a defense contractor there in New Jersey, and he'd been listening to this program, I guess, for a couple, 3 years, and he got a little nervous. And so he said, you know, when this thing collapses, when this thing goes down, maybe New Jersey isn't going to be the best place to be living in. You know, we could have some civil unrest, you know, when people start losing their houses and cars and jobs and one thing and another. And not only is there civil unrest, I've got a house. And he had a house, and I don't know exactly what the mortgage was, but it was $220,000. Typical average Joe Sixpack, bought a house in the suburbs, commutes to work, makes good money, living his life, doing his thing, but he's got this $220,000 debt or something on this house. Well, you've been watching prices inflate, housing prices and one thing and another. So one day, he sold his house, quit his job, and moved to Missouri. Now, you've heard me mention this before, that housing prices are so high in San Francisco, California, over $600,000 for one of those median-priced North Beach houses. $600,000. You could sell that house in San Francisco, buy a house of comparable size in Jacksonville, Florida, for $150,000 and pocket $450,000 in the process. Well, now, that's assuming, of course, you own the house free and clear, but this guy didn't own the house free and clear, but he had a pretty sizable, equitable interest in it. So he sold the house, and he walked out of there with a check for, I think he said, $75,000, or maybe $85,000, something like that. Now, that's a pretty good score, $75,000 or $85,000. That'd make him a down payment on a bigger, better house somewhere in New Jersey. But instead of doing that, he moved away from New Jersey and he moved out here to the country. And he bought two houses and 7 acres with that $75,000 profit that he made off of that house. I think he paid $65,000 for these two houses here. It's just down the road a piece from where I'm at. Now, let me show you what happened here. This guy took a $220,000 liability and turned it into a free and clear asset with a rental property in addition, 7 acres instead of a lot. And then he ended up with a few thousand bucks in his pocket in addition to that. Now, that's just one story. I could sit here and tell you 10 or 15 stories like that. But there's an example of what a guy did. He took his house equity, and it's very common. I mean, you can take most of you people living in the cities, you know, because of this big run-up, this irrational exuberance in the real estate market has now run housing prices up so high that there are some profits there. Now, before somebody wakes up to the fact that hyperinflation is taking root like it did in Germany, now's the time to make your sale, make your score, and get out of debt. That's what every newsletter writer is telling you. Get out of debt, because if you can't service the debt, you're going to lose the toy. So would you rather have a pickup, a 10-year-old pickup that's free and clear, or would you rather have a brand new $40,000 diesel dually that has a negative equity of $10,000 and payments of $1,500 a month? I mean, you know, it's your choice in life. It's a choice that you have to make. For me, I think I'll just take the free and clear pickup, 10 years old, something that I own, so that when the collapse comes, I'll still have a pickup to drive around while you're huffing it or riding your bicycle. And I'll start thinking about that. I guess we're at about the halfway point before I start out here again. We're reading from The Core Rate by Jim Kuplava. Remember, you can get a copy of this, financialsense.com. That's www.financialsense.com. He's explaining in this treatise what we call the Consumer Price Index Core Rate. It's as phony as a $3 Federal Reserve note. You might as well understand it, because this is what they're lying to you about, and here's how they're stealing from you. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about The Law Hour and The Law School, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Now, The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log and schedule and archives. It can be accessed through the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Remember, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. And the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to the authors and publications that we use on this program, and often we endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications that we endorse or recommend are going to reciprocate. And that's because most of the authors and publications cited on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily endorsed by us here at the Law Hour. And that doesn't mean that they're going to endorse the Law Hour or vice versa. The opinions, beliefs, comments, news, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call the Law School direct at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. All right, we're reviewing what's known as the CPI. That is the Consumer Price Index. All right, what we can say now is that the United States is experiencing real inflation in the economy, and that is much higher than what is reported. In other words, it's more like 6 to 8%. Now, Kuplava is being very conservative. He says the real inflation rate is running 6 to 8%, in addition to real inflation in the economy. The U.S. has experienced hyperinflation in the financial economy, first in the stock market, the tech bubble between 1995 and 2000, and then in the mortgage, bond, and real estate market since 2000. If inflation continues to increase, as I suspect in the real economy, I can guarantee you that it will never show up in the consumer price index and the producer price index. Real inflation will be removed statistically through the magic of hedonics, geometric weighting, substitution, and seasonal adjustments. This whole process of purposefully understanding the real inflation rate also keeps real inflation artificially subdued. Think of all of the aspects of our economy that are tied to the CPI. Listed below are just a few examples. Wage and labor contracts, rents, COLAs on pensions, that's cost of living adjustments on pensions, and market interest rates. Labor contract negotiations begin with CPI adjustments, annual raises at companies are based on CPI changes. Think of how many workers fall further behind in their pay because of an understated CPI. How many landlords are cheated out of their just rents by understated inflation rates? How many retirees are robbed of real increases to their pensions as a result of underreported inflation? What would be the real estate, or what would be the real rate of interest, if bond investors figured out that the real inflation rate was 6% and not 3% as reported by the Bureau of Labor Statistics? An understated CPI also overstates the gross domestic product by not removing the full inflationary impact of pricing from nominal numbers. It also overstates productivity by overstating the numerator part of the equation. Any debate over deflation or inflation must begin with the truth. By habitually pointing to an understated consumer price index as proof that inflationary forces remain moderate is disingenuous at best and fraudulent at its worst. The truth is that we're experiencing real inflation rates of 6% in the real economy and hyperinflationary rates in the financial economy and bonds, mortgages, and real estate. And when the next downturn comes, it will most assuredly alert investors to keep a sharp eye out for the next asset bubble to hyperinflate. Will it be stocks, as occurred in the Weimar Republic, Japan, and the United States? Will it be hard assets such as gold and silver and other hard commodities, as has occurred throughout all the history when governments inflate their currencies? What we have now is inflation. Forget the CPI or the PPI and the core rate. These are all fraudulent inflation gauges designed to confuse and obfuscate the real inflation issue. There's no such thing as the core rate. The core rate doesn't exist here in the real world. And the next time you see an increase at the grocery store, the gasoline station, your utility or cable bill, your children's tuition, your property taxes, or your dentist or doctor's bill, just ask for the core rate. Hey, dentist, what's the core rate? Hey, utility company, what's the core rate? That is when you will be confronted by the reality of this core rate fiction. Now, you might keep in mind that the inflation-deflation debate will be showcased on the FSN network with both sides making their case. Bob Pritchner was the first guest. Dr. Mark Faber and John Williams will be next in line. And then a lengthy piece on hyperinflation will be written making its case after my summer sabbatical in August, part two of The Great Inflation, coming sometime in late September, early October. The piece will be lengthy and may be published in four parts due to the length of its contents. I've got Mary worried because it's beginning to look like War and Peace. And as many are fond of making bold predictions, I'll make a few here. 10 reasons for hyperinflation. Number one, global oil production will peak between 2005 and 2008. Economic growth ceases to exist as global economies and markets are thrown into chaos and turmoil. Number two, the war on terror escalates into a resource war over oil, pitting the great powers, the United States, China, and Russia, in a replay of the great game. Number three, debt creation and monetization hyperinflates as the government's deficit spirals out of control with a war and a depression. Number four, foreigners begin to bail out of the dollar, setting off a dollar crash. Number five, the U.S. puts in place capital controls to corral U.S. and domestic money. The war on terror will be given as the reason. Number six, the government takes over the GSEs, owning most American mortgages. Number seven, a national mortgage bailout bill will be passed, lengthening mortgage payments in an effort to forestall debt defaults. A new restructuring agency will be set up to repurchase impaired mortgages from the banking system and then renegotiate terms of the debt to avoid default. This will be when the 100-year mortgage is born. A National Retirement Security Act is passed, forcing private pensions to buy long-dated zero-coupon government bonds that will be inflated away. The reason given will be for plan protection against bear markets. Number nine, as the U.S. economy goes into a hyperinflationary depression, the rest of the world's economies will follow suit. Money printing on a grand scale occurs in Western and Asian economies as governments wrestle and try to satisfy the demands of a social welfare state and an angry, aging population. And then number 10, as governments hyperinflate, they debase their currencies. Gold will take on its true role as money, rising in value against all of the currencies. The world will move towards a global currency backed by gold. I have a few more, but these 10 should do for now. And my arguments for deflation, elimination of the Federal Reserve, gold backing of the U.S. dollar, honesty returns as a virtue to Washington, and world peace. Did you get that? World peace. Honesty returns as a virtue to Washington, gold backing of the U.S. dollar, elimination of the Federal Reserve. You know, these are dreams that are never going to occur. The Federal Reserve is here to stay, and the evils that go along with it, so get used to it. But what are we going to do about it? What should you and I, Joe Sixpack and Sally Housewife, be doing? Well, why don't you get a copy for openers of this report? Let's start right there. Jim Puplava, we got this off the World Wide Web here, off the Internet. Just go to www.financialsense.com/stormwatch, and I think that'll do it for you, financialsense.com. Now that's where we want to start. This is a fiction that we're dealing with here. So let's get used to this fiction and let's take a look at some more reports here as we get into the step-by-step sequence of events. What are we going to do about it? Now here's a story here by Kurt Reichbacher. Kurt Reichbacher, Bacher, maybe it's spelled. It's R-I-C-H-E-B-A-C-H-E-R. Dr. Kurt Reichbacher, June 27th. It's called thedailyreckoning.com. So if you went to thedailyreckoning.com or go to Kitco, K-I-T-C-O.com, and you'll get this report. The Daily Reckoning presents, do inflating house prices truly enrich homeowners? Do they enrich the nation? Our short answer to both questions is a categorical no. And the ugly truth is that both are impoverished. Dr. Reichbacher explores. Let's start with a quote from Frederick von Hayek. Quote, the means of perception employed in statistics are not the same as those employed in economic theory, unquote. American economists think far too much in statistical terms regardless of underlying economic processes. And while the statistics do indeed show general enrichment, in reality there's none at all. The homeowner has zero gain in his comfort of living or income. All right, let me pause here for a moment. Let me tell you something. As housing prices go up, unless you're going to sell your house, take your profit and invest it someplace else, you've got a net loss. And here's why. Let's suppose you bought your house 10, 15, 20 years ago and you've paid half of it off. You got a 50% equity in the house. You bought the house for $50,000 and today the house is worth $200,000. So you've paid off half of that mortgage. So maybe you're sitting here with $100,000 or $150,000 worth of equity in that house. And you said, wow, that's really great. I got all this equity. Did you notice that your property taxes have gone up? They're not taxing your property at the $50,000 level. They bumped that tax up, and now they got a $200,000 tax. So now your property taxes are double or triple what they were 10 or 15 years ago. And as your housing prices go up, and as the general inflation rate in the economy goes up, the local governments need more money. They got to have more money to pay higher wages, to pay for higher costs of buying things, to fix the potholes in the roads, and to build the bridges, and to run the county government and do all those things the government does. And they get that by raising your property taxes. And every time your property taxes go up, your wages go up based upon the consumer price index. So while inflation is running at 12% a year, your wages are being increased by 3% a year. So this housing bubble over here isn't any great value. Now, if in fact you're going to sell your house and cash out, and you've got this $200,000 house and you got this $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 debt, and you cash this out and you walk out of there with $150,000 in cash, then you come out here to the countryside and you buy yourself a house and some acreage. And you pay cash for it, and you get $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 left over cash in your pocket. Then you go out and you buy a 4-year supply of food, and you stash that away. And then you've got your tax money for the next 4 years stashed away in gold coin, and then you've got some gold coin and you stash that away. Now you've actually converted your house, this inflated bubble house, into some real hard assets. You're now free and clear, and if you've got food, clothing, and shelter, and you've got a free and clear house, you're sitting pretty well. Now, of course, you got the problem of, well, how do I make a living? Well, you got the same problem in the city. Here's what you're going to be faced with. They're going to export your job to India. You got a $200,000 mortgage on the house. You're just as unemployed living in Trenton, New Jersey, as you would be out here in the boondocks. The difference is you got a house that's worth $200,000, but you got a $50,000 mortgage on it that you can't service the debt on. You can't pay the property taxes. You're just as unemployed. You're 10 times worse off. You're going to lose the house anyway. Now, you don't have the free and clear house in the country. And you don't have the house in the city, you don't have the job in the country, and you don't have the job in the city, and you don't have the food, clothing, and shelter stocked up in the city or in the country, you're on welfare. You are in the worst of both worlds. Now that's what's coming down. That's what everybody's telling us. Now this perception of wealth has its true basis in nothing but the famous greater fool theory. Greater fool theory. That is, in the expectation that there will be a greater fool to buy the acquired house later at a higher price. Deluded by this wealth chimera, private households have run down to their savings and piled up astronomic debts to be repaid with future earned income. Here's another problem. Many people are taking the equity out of their houses. So you got this $150,000 equity. So they go out here and refinance the house. Take the $150,000 and go out and squander the money on a new car, new pickup, swimming pool in the backyard, and college tuition for the kids, and you're spending this money. Now, instead of having a $50,000 house with a $25,000 mortgage, they now have a $200,000 house with a $150,000 mortgage, and the payments now, instead of being, you know, what they were 10, 15 years ago at the $50,000 level, are now double that, but the interest rate's much less, and after all, you're still making pretty good money. You're still working down here at the factory. What are you going to do when your factory job is exported? Now, keep in mind that factory employment was 53% of the gross domestic product here 40 years ago. Today, it's 9%. And that 9% is an anomaly, and they're going to export that to China, too. So if you're working here in the United States, you can kiss your job goodbye. And if you're working for the airlines and you're thinking about retiring on your pension fund or Social Security, you know, I think you can forget that. The pension funds are upside down. General Motors is upside down. Most of the Fortune 500 companies are upside down. That's where reality's at. Most of them. Not all, but most. General Motors is leading the parade. And like Enron, you know these big companies that can't go broke and the government won't let them go broke because they're too big, you know. Get ready for the New World Order, boys and girls. You know, as they say, bend over and get the Vaseline. Where then are the economic benefits? Well, the one obvious visible benefit is in the push to gross domestic product growth from higher consumer spending, which also increases current incomes. Yes, that's true. But much of that spending on cars, furniture, and houses is borrowed from the future. And that is, the borrowing pulls future spending into the present, but of course at the expense of such spending in the future. I mean, if you're going to borrow the money and spend it today, you're not going to have that money to spend next year, 5 years, or 10 years from now. Now, if you think it over, you realize that in reality, such a borrowing spending bubble adds nothing to economic growth and only distorts the time frame of spending in relation to its long-term trend, as in the case of the consumer determined by the underlying rate of income growth. Income growth is 3% a year, and inflation is 12% a year, and we're going to spend our equity in our homes by borrowing it and spending it today. How is that going to benefit us 5 or 10 years down the road? Now, the second problem is that such a bubble distorts and deforms the direction of demand and production in the economy. Consider these grossly disproportionate increases in U.S. domestic spending since 2000. Consumer durables are up 30%, residential building 29%, non-residential investment 6%, imports 23%, and exports 6%. Now, strikingly, all economies with housing bubbles have features in common that were in the past generally associated with ailing economies. You know, if we took a look at our economy today and where we're headed, and looked at it 30 years ago, we'd say that our economy is ailing. Today, they're telling us the economy is booming, the economy is great, everything's fine, turning up all roses. Now, these are collapsed savings, skyrocketing debts, chronic large-scale deficits, and a booming residential investment, but weak business investment. Now, that's what we see going on here today. Let me repeat that. The collapse in savings, skyrocketing debts, chronic large trade deficits, booming residential investment, and weak business investment equal an ailing economy. They're telling us that this is a booming economy. It's exactly upside down. The coincidence is not accidental. The common denominator of these countries is runaway consumer spending. That's the key point. The big spending excesses in these countries are in consumption, while business fixed investment is in the doldrums. Policymakers and economists in the countries with these symptoms are the first in history to proclaim that people and nations become richer and consumer borrowing and spending binges. Hey, do you think that by spending more money, piling on more debt, makes you wealthier? If you do, you want to stick with the current program. You're in Fat City. This is heaven. Nirvana has arrived. If you think that there's a day of reckoning coming at some point down the road, and that maybe there's going to be some repossessions of these new cars and new toys and new houses that you're buying, then getting your house in order today is number one on the list. This report, by the way, comes from Kurt Reichbacher. I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly here, Kurt Reichbacher. That's spelled R-I-C-H-E. B-A-C-H-E-R. You can get this report off of Kitco, Crippling Wealth. It's entitled June 27th, 2005. Or you could probably go to dailyreckoning.com. And just one word, dailyreckoning.com, or go to Kitco and scroll down and pick up Crippling Wealth by Dr. Kurt Reichbacher. This coincidence is not accidental. The common denominator of these countries is runaway consumer spending. That's what's going on in America. Runaway consumer spending. And we think this is terrific. We're getting all of these bargains coming in here from China. Now, the Chinese are building up a trade surplus, and they're coming over here and they're buying Maytag and Union Oil Company. Boys and girls, this is not good for America. Now, if you think it is, well, then just keep after it. Don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. But I don't think that selling the family business or the family home, or selling American assets is good for America. I don't believe it for a minute. It's kind of like this free trade crap that's been going on. You know, they told us, well, this free trade's great. And it is. It's great for China. It's great for Japan. It's not good for America. It's not good for American jobs. It's never been good for the American economy. Short term, we get benefits. We get cheap goods out of Walmart. Long term, we lose our jobs. They're being exported to foreign countries. And we have to compete with these slave labor countries. Now, if you want to work for 40, 50, 60 cents an hour, then get after it. Don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. But companies are moving their manufacturing operations offshore because they cannot compete with those slave wage rates. And you're buying the merch cheap at Walmart, but you're paying for it with your job. Instead of making $20 an hour or $15 an hour, you're over here flipping burgers or doing something else, or you're unemployed, or you're working in an underemployed capacity. Now, that's the trend in America. So tuck that one away in your heart and don't forget it. Reichbacher goes on to say that Of course, it is stupid to believe that this aversion can be broken with still lower interest rates in the first place. It robs the savers of income on their large mass of existing savings, and it will shock them. The crucial difference to see is that Europeans are primarily savers, while people in Anglo-Saxon countries are primarily borrowers. Consumption-driven bubble economies reveal themselves at first through sharply falling personal savings. Their second typical yet spectacular hallmark is large trade deficits. Now, our trade deficit last year was $500 billion, this year $600 billion, next year they're talking $800 billion, possibly $900 billion. We'll be over a trillion here in a couple of 3 years, you know, just as time goes on. Now, in the next program, I'm going to give you a couple of more shocking statistical insights into our economy. And then when we get through with the shock and awe of the reality of our CPI and of our housing bubble, we'll take a look at some of the factors that cause it and what can you do to solve your problem in your family. What are you going to do to eliminate that $200,000 house debt that you've got? Or what are you going to do to solve that employment problem? I mean, all of us have to work and do something to make a living. And when your job is taken away from you and exported to some foreign country, it'll be wonderful news for some Chinaman or some Indian, and I don't deny that. And those people need to work too. But meanwhile, back on the farm, do they need to work at my expense? Do I have to give my job, my employment, my home, my car, my standard of living to some guy in India or China because he's poor and I'm not? I say not by the hair on my chinny chin chin, not if I can avoid it, not if I can stop it. So remember these two key articles here that we started out with, the core rate, Jim Puplava. Remember, that's called www.financialsense.com. It's called the core rate. Second one over here is crippling wealth. It's the article here by Kurt Reichbacher. What's crippling wealth in America? It's 3 pages, I think. Nothing big, but he's going to tell you the story here on this thing of crippling the American economy, and it is indeed being crippled. General Motors is being crippled. And as a result of that, 25,000 jobs. I just saw this the other day. General Motors is going to lay off 25,000 people. Now, those 25,000 people are going to translate into 175,000 lost jobs, because every time you lose a job at General Motors, there's a ripple effect that goes out into the economy. Don't forget that. All right, I'm about out of time. I got to leave it right here. We'll take it up right here. We're talking about the economic bubble and what you can do to protect yourself from it. Take your assets and run. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. For more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Remember, The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call The Law School direct, 417-273-4967. Again, that's 417-273-4967. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Time's up. I've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.